So as many of you know, Kupu'ohi is Mehana's favorite character.
Hands down.
I asked her if there was anyone she wanted to talk to other than Jason Momoa, who would it be? And she immediately said Kupu'ohi. Me, you know, I'm still coming around on Kupu'ohi, but, you know, I get it.
Come out, Russell.
So I put out a request for an interview through a couple of different channels, and it took a couple of weeks, but she finally had a window in her schedule, and we got the chance to talk to her.
Kupu'ohi is played by Māori actress Te'awo Hinepehinga, who prior to Chief of War was best known for her roles in Head High, Shortland Street, and Breakwater. Her role as Kupu'ohi has showcased the many facets of Mana Wahine through her warrior skills, her compassionate gestures, her diplomatic savviness, her ability to logically approach and look for resolutions to dilemmas, her support of fellow women, and her sheer awesomeness. Here's our interview with Te'awo Hinepehinga.
One of the things that we loved about Chief of War and that we felt was incredibly important was how much Olelo Hawaii is spoken throughout the series. And I'm sure there was like a wide spectrum of familiarity with our language amongst the actors. You being Māori and having experience with your native language, was it easier for you to pick up Olelo Hawaii, or was it kind of still a challenge?
I argue it was harder. Like, it was easy in the sense that, yes, the sounds are very similar and the language has so much similarities that you kind of go, yeah, we're definitely related. But it's the intonation that I really struggled with, if I'm being honest. Because, yes, there's things like wahine and wahine, but you can hear the intonation is on the I in Nolelo Hawaii, whereas in Te Reo Māori, you'd have it usually at in the first vowel. And so, though I was like, oh yeah, I've got this. This is cool. And then I'd start speaking and acting in it. And Kalaikova'a, my language coach, was like, okay, I see it, but it sounds Māori. I know you're speaking Olelo Hawaii. And so it was that. It was such a like difficulty to be able to hear the difference. I remember talking about it with Te Kohe Tuhaka, who plays Namake, and I was kind of like, bro, please tell me I'm not the only one who keeps getting this wrong. And he's like, nah, sis, it's me too. And this is a man who actually speaks multiple languages. It was the hardest thing to undo because it was so hard to hear it yourself. At least when you mispronounce it, you can hear it when somebody repeats it. But I think poor Kiave had to put up with me. He'd say it and I'd say it and he's like, no, say it again. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong?
Well, the hard work paid off because it came across really beautifully on the screen.
Oh, thank you.
So your role, Kupu'ohi, like Russell said, my favorite in the show, very easily. And I was wondering what types of experiences or personal beliefs and values helped you to best play this dynamic role of this lead female character?
It's funny, I've had that question a bit, but it's the way that the specificity in which you're asking, I'm like, oh, I like this. It's interesting. I remember when I first read the script, Kupu'ohi, because I was auditioning for Ka'ahumanu, but Kupu'ohi, just this moment I saw her come across the page, I just went, who is that? She just kind of resonated with me, and I didn't know what it was at the time. And I think after all of these conversations, I've started to realize it's because she reminded me of all of the women that I've grown up with and that many of our Polynesian whānau have grown up with. And I just kind of went, wow, I've never seen that represented in a Hollywood script, in a big budget script like this. And it just kind of like, it gave me chills to think that this is going to happen. And so I think in the approach, it was quite easy to draw on people in my own life, like my nanny Drina and my mum, because they are very strong, prominent mana wahine who do a lot of work in our community around uplifting tikanga Māori, te ao Māori, and our other Indigenous communities here. And so they were the easy ones. And I was like, cool. But then it was really important for me that she would be grounded in Hawaii, because even though, yes, we're cousins, we're not the same. Our environments are different. Our personalities are different. Our history is different for a big chunk of time. And so there is Hwani K. Trask. So I came across her a couple years before I even auditioned. One of her talks that she did went viral in Aotearoa, and I just went, wow. that's a woman who truly can stand in her power with so much grace and intelligence. And so when I thought about who I wanted to kind of draw inspiration from, she was the first person that popped into my head. And I went through and I watched everything. I read every paper that she'd written, every talk and interview, and I just absorbing as much of her mana as I could. And so she kind of, whenever I felt like I wasn't sure about a scene or how to manage a confrontation, I would actually go back and watch her talk. And I'm trying to remember, there's a specific one, and it's when she's standing under a kind of a gazebo in a park. I can't remember what it's, what.
Possibly at Yeleni Palace.
Yes, yes, that was the one. And I watched that everything, because every time I was kind of like, oh, what's the energy? Because she has this fierceness, but then when she comes into love and sharing the aloha of the message, there's this soft gentleness to her. And she kept that balance in that same talk. And I think that was like, that was one of the things I was like, yes, yes. But then the final piece of the puzzle, and I think this is what helped me keep her real and keep her grounded in the moment of the work, and it was my language coach, Kalei Kova'a. She gave so much of her heart and time to me in doing all of the Olelo training, because we were on calls like every night for months leading up to the production, throughout the production. And as we were doing it, I kind of realized, I was like, oh, well, because I don't speak Olelo, I don't know where is the right places to put emphasis on words, because it's different in every language. It's different between Māori and English. And so we would work together about the intentions of the scenes, her past, her presence, and how she would kind of feel and how she would emote the things that she was saying. And so in a lot of ways, and I've said, Kalei and I have laughed about this. She's like, oh, you don't need to say that. And I'm like, lady, sis, you have to realize you did. You helped me create this character every single time we were on Zoom. You were helping me with, why is she saying this? What is she trying to say? What is her intentions? She really did build the character with me. So it's, you might see my face on screen, but it's Kalei Kova'a's voice that you're hearing.
And you know, now that you said you took a lot of inspiration from these, all of these women, and in particular, when you say Auntie Honeni K. Trass, I see it in there now that I think about it. I was one of her students. So I had the privilege of being her student when she taught at Kamakaku Kalani Center for Hawaiian Studies. And she had this regal air around her, but she was still very approachable. She was incredibly knowledgeable. She was steadfast in her beliefs. And I'm like, kupuahi, you know? And so, you did definitely bring her to life. We miss her tremendously. So it's wonderful you took that inspiration from all of, from your history, from our history, and from our present people today. How cool.
Yeah. Oh, man, you got me all emotional saying that. Like, especially because you're a student. Like, my mother and I are huge admirers of her work and everything she's, her legacy. So to hear from one of her own students, I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, have a little cry about
she
that.
She said things that were sometimes very unpopular in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And she was a huge part of the resistance and the movement and the renaissance that got started in Hawaii. And we have so much to owe her today from where we are now. And I feel like Kupu'ohi has those traits too, where she doesn't always do things that are popular, but she knows they're right. So she's willing to take that stand.
To kind of build off of that, one thing I love about the series is how our wahine are portrayed as capable and knowledgeable. One of my favorite scenes is from that final battle when the wahine are in that V formation and their ma'a swinging over their heads and you shout imua, and we see the women advance into battle. There's also this complementary balance between men and women, both in relationships and across the community as a whole within the series. What are your thoughts on why our kupuna felt this way about the relationship between men and women, and specifically about women, when the rest of the world kind of saw women in a lesser light at that point in history?
It's funny you ask that, because I do wonder that sometimes, like when I go to more Western-centric places and I'm kind of like, oh, that's really interesting, the male-female dynamic. And I do wonder, I mean, I can only speak from my own experience as a Māori, but I do wonder if our Indigenous peoples around the world, because they didn't adhere to the Christian concept of women and men, we didn't have any social conditionings that would put anyone into a box where they can't do certain things or they can do certain things. When I look at history and when I look at, especially within the story that we tell on Chief of War and the history that I got to read about this journey, the focus was never on, oh, well, she's a woman, she does this. He's a man, he does this. Outside of the kapu system, it was, when it came down to it, it was, are you capable of doing this? Sweet, cool, you're going to do it. No one cared about what was between your legs. It was just like, if you can swing a ma'a, you can swing a ma'a. If you're really good at bandaging, cool. We didn't adhere to any kind of preconceived notion of what was masculine and what was feminine. It was just, you had strengths and you had weaknesses. And then because we're such, at least in Polynesia, we're such a community focused people, and it's all about everyone just pulling their weight. I think it makes sense. Like, if you think about how even our kids are raised, yes, you've got a mother, you've got a father, but it's, you're raised by your aunties, your uncles, your neighbors, your grandparents. So yeah, it almost befuzzles me to think that there are societies out there who don't, I almost think like they're missing out on opportunities by adhering to these male-female ideologies, because there are plenty of men who might be really great gardeners, but if it's a woman's job, then they might not ever be able to discover their skill sets or their passions or any kind of this. And there are plenty of incredible female CEOs, politicians, leaders in this world. And I can't help but wonder, how many mistakes have we made because we put the wrong person in the positions of leadership purely because of what was between their legs?
I think I can add to that too, with the idea that our kupuna and your tupuna understood that there are male and female elements in everything, and that in order to have balance and have harmonious relationships and have the best outcomes, you always need to have those elements intermingling with one another, not segregated from each other. And I think our kupuna really had that deep understanding of how do you create life? Male and female come together. So any types of decisions, any types of works that need to be done, always need to acknowledge that. And like you said, it's not about what your gender is, it's about your genealogy, it's about your abilities, your skills, about what you're able to offer. And so we always prioritize those things. And our tutus had this elevated understanding of the universe and our roles and male and female coming into creation and working together, that I think a lot of people could learn really good lessons from.
And I love that. I love what you said. It's like there's elements of femininity and masculinity within all people. And it's about, like you said, finding that balance within yourself, and that can look different for every person. So I think it's really cool to get to learn that more and more of our Indigenous cultures have that mentality. I mean, I said it once, but I'll say it again. Indigenous knowledge was the first knowledge, and we didn't get it wrong that often.
Perfect. Love it. Okay, something connected to Chief of War specifically in Kupu Ohi as a character. So she, again, like we've mentioned, she's, you know, this very kind of stoic character. She is very put together. She doesn't let the emotion get the best of her, unlike like Ka'iana, who's always, you know, kind of going off at things. But if you had to kind of unravel her, what do you think is going underneath the surface? What is she feeling? What is she thinking throughout the season? What is she containing?
Oh, gosh. I love that question, because, yeah, that was a big part of my process, I think, because Kupu Ohi, I admire Kupu Ohi so much. She's such a, like you said, she's so stoic, she's steadfast. And me personally, I do not feel that way. My tutus, my nannies have been telling me my whole life, I'm away with the fairies. So it was such a challenge to really understand and differentiate between what she was putting out and what was really going on the inside. And I think that part I resonated with, because I honestly wonder how much pain she must have been in through this whole process. When you look at her life, she left her community, her family, her world for so much of her life to be with this man that she loved so much. And I mean, I feel like we're all Polynesian in this room. We can all relate. It's hard to leave your family. It's hard to be away from your aina, from your whenua. But sometimes you do it for love or you do it for duty. And she did that. But to then have to return home and be put in positions where she has to make that choice again and again, but instead of making it with the love of her life standing beside her, many times she was standing opposite him. And so it's hard to comprehend how she must be feeling, or how they must both be feeling, as two people who have given up so much, to then be facing off against each other in the most tumultuous environment. It was a tumultuous time, but the stakes are so much higher, and having to pick between your love for one person and the love you have for your people is not an easy decision to make. Kaiana would say something and the kupo here in me was just screaming, smack him. Smack him around the ears, drag him into the hut and teach him a bloody lesson. But she doesn't. She doesn't, because she knows herself and she knows her people well enough to understand that there's a time and a place, and often that is not the time nor the place, even though it would probably be helpful. And so it's interesting watching her be put into these situations that force her to question, I guess, her moral compass, but also her own heart, to have let go of a love that she gave up everything for in an assumption that he's dead, only to then have him show up again. And she's like, well, that was the wrong decision. And then to finally, and then great, you've got your love back. You can move past this. Hey, it's back in the day. We slept with everyone. It's okay. But then to find the man that she loves isn't actually present. She's staring at a stranger, and then having to face off against him to protect her people over this man that she thought she, or that she does love, but is no longer the man she loves, is turning into something that she doesn't agree with. It's a hard thing. It's a hard situation. I think I can only describe it as a roller coaster, a roller coaster of emotions. But I do remember, because I was talking to Jason about this, about her journey, because obviously ours as husband and wife, very intermingled. And he said at the very beginning, he was like, there is a moment in this script where you will break, but you don't break until that point. You stay firm, you stay steadfast. I don't want to see you cry. You are the Po for the whole time until you snap. And in that moment, everything comes out. And so it was nice to know that even though my instincts were screaming, get him, smack him, I was like, no, contain, there will be a moment, there will be a point. And it was so, I think I realized just how powerful that is. And it's such a female experience, because we do, we're steadfast, we hold firm, we are the Po of our families. But eventually there's a breaking point. And in that breaking point, I mean, I've watched women in my life hit that breaking point. The world should be scared the moment a woman reaches her breaking point. Because when a woman is unleashed, nothing can stop her. She doesn't care. She will cut throats if she has to. She will cut you down to size with no problem. And so I'm interested to see what that looks like for Kupuahi, because she is a Po, and historically that's how she's documented. So I don't know. I'm intrigued to see how she processes the next phase.
Yeah.
I'm just excited.
Yeah. Super excited. My last question is, assuming that Kupuahi recovers from the spear in her belly.
We've already decided if she doesn't, we're going to quit.
Yeah, we're not going to watch anymore.
You can take it up with Jason, because he literally ran up to me and was just like, we're going to stab you right here. And I was like, what?
Had she not been through enough already?
Right.
Like, seriously?
Yeah, I honestly turned, because I'm such a cheeky little shit, if I'm honest. And I would like play jokes on him often. And when he said that, because it was after like 2 months of working together, I was like, come on, I'm not that bad. You don't need to shish kebab me. And he's like, no, it's just a little stabbing. And then I get the thing, and it's like a full shish kebab.
Yeah.
Men.
Yeah. So assuming Kupuahi makes a full recovery, and assuming that there is a season 2, where would you like to see your story go next? I think a lot of the audience, I think we saw a lot of them Team Kayana, some of them Team Namake. We even had this discussion many times. But where would you like to see your character go if there is a season two?
In terms of Namake and Kayana, ¿por qué no los dos? It's Hawaii. Why can't I have both?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I mean, historically speaking, I'm more high ranking than both of them. So honestly, I think back in the day, she probably would have. The brothers were cool with it. She'd be like, no, I'm not picking. Why should I have to pick? You two sort it out.
Your mother taught you how to share, right? Let's go.
Yeah. But in terms of her actual story, I loved finding all the research, and I learned that she was actually a pivotal member of Kamehameha's army, and she helped to redefine their battle practices with muskets. And so she had this entire battalion of Wahinekoa warrior women who were just deadly with muskets. So they traded in the ma'a for the muskets and helped to, I think there's a couple of different pieces of history that would say that she was a pivotal part of the success of Kamehameha's unification. Again, I say there's a couple, not my history, not my kupuna, oh, not my tipuna, but I would agree with them as well. She's pretty badass and she's pretty intelligent. And I'd love to see that. I would love to see Kupuhi come into her leadership powers a little bit more in that space and see what that looks like. I also just really want to play with the muskets, if I'm being honest. They're really cool. They're old school and they're really, really cool. I'd really love, I mean, this would be going beyond season two if it was to happen, but I'd really love to see how we choose to tell her turning point where she went from warrior woman to poet. I haven't found it in the history what actually made her decide. I have an inkling, and anyone who knows the history of Kayama and Kupuhi and how that story ends, I wonder if that's what actually drove her to put down her ma'a and walk away from battle and decide to lead a life of peace and poetry. But I'd love to see that journey. I think it would be such an interesting thing to see that journey as a woman going from power to loss, to then peace, and see what that looks like from an Indigenous perspective, because it's a dramatic change. It's such a dramatic change to go from warrior to poet. Where was that thinking? Who inspired that?
And really, only a Wahine could make that type of transformation when you think about it.
It is. It's such a female, I think it's such a female-centric journey, but it also, I think, is a really cool way to share the different ways that war can impact your life. We talk about how war is very traumatic, and it is, and it's awful, but there's something in her story that makes me feel like there's another version, or there's another outcome that can come out of war, and that is peace, prosperity, learning, and art. And I'm just like, that's so interesting. I want to see what that looks like. I want to experience what that looks like. Hopefully season two. Come on guys. Also, Kupuhi and Ka'ahu Manu need to be best friends, because they totally are best friends.
Yeah,
they work best to see together more of it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I need more Kupuhi and Ka'ahu Manu scenes. Pa'a, I promise I will behave myself. I can't speak for Luch, but we will try to be good humans and not be menaces together and get the work done. Just give us more scenes together, please.
We've heard stories. We talked to Moses a couple weeks ago. Yeah, we've heard stories.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Moses. Love you, Moses. Sorry.
All right.
For the record, he's probably next to us. But...
All right. Well, we also wanted to know, aside from Chief of War, what do you have going on right now? What types of projects? What's coming up?
I'm back in Aotearoa. I've been working on a couple projects here. Most recently, there's a show called Te Rapunga coming out. And she is very different, this character. Her name is Ataliang. She's fabulous. She's a flight attendant. She has beautiful hair, beautiful nails. She's a bit of a queen. and she's in the middle of a bush trying to survive. Oh. It's very entertaining. It's very entertaining. And so that's been really fun. And then... actually, currently, I'm actually working on a couple of community projects. I'm hoping to do some more work similar to ICAM, but more focus. My interest is more around the connection between mental wellness and creativity. Mm-hmm. So I've been quietly studying towards getting my master's in psychology very slowly.
Congratulations.
Very slowly. Thank you. And learning more about how the creative arts can benefit our communities, both from an Indigenous perspective. I mean, again, it's part of our culture. We sing, we dance, we tell stories. And I think that there's something in that that I think can help to heal not only our people, but the greater world community. But yeah, so that's my focus, just trying to give more to my community. I've been very blessed in my life to be supported by an incredible community who have uplifted me throughout this entire journey. And so I, between projects, if I can, or even during projects, I'll always try to find a way to be able to take the skills and the knowledge that I've learned from my work and from the people like yourselves who I get to hang out with and get to know and hear stories from, and feed it back into our communities and hope that it gives more, brings more beauty to the world. I think that we need more creativity in this world and in our lives. And it needs to come from somewhere other than TikTok and Netflix.
Well, thank you so much for your amazing portrayal of Kupu'ohi. You've done such a fabulous job, and we appreciate you. It's been wonderful.
Thank you, Te Ao. Thank really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you.
Bye. Aloha nui. Ahui ho.
Thanks for listening to our interview with Maori actress Te Ao Ohinepehinga, who portrays Kupu'ohi in Chief of War. That is it for our coverage of Chief of War Season 1. Mihana and I will be back if there is a Season 2. But until then, thank you so much for listening to Feathers and Fire. It really was a joy to make this podcast for you all. There's always a chance that we'll find some interesting interviews along the way. And if we do, we'll continue to post them in this feed so that you can continue the buzz and the excitement and the celebration of this historic season. I'm Russell Subiono. Thanks again for all of your support. And as Mihana would say, pipi holo ka'au.